Welcome to episode 247 of Fly Away. We're a group of agents from Outlander Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or are just tuning in, we're happy you've found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, and our favorite experiences, and lots more. We love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. My name is Lindsay, and this week I am joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Donna, Laura, Sandy, and George. Donna recently spent over a week exploring Austria with her family by car. Austria is located in Central Europe and borders with Germany, Switzerland, and Italy, and Slovenia, Hungary, Slovakia, and the Czech Republic. From the Alps to rolling farmland, Austria has a rich history filled with kings and queens, war stories, and music. So let's get started. So what cities did you visit?
Oh, we basically went all over. But the main ones were really Vienna and Salzburg. But there's a lot of little towns and everything that we drove through quite regularly because we actually stayed about an hour away in close to Zell am See, which is a huge ski area. And then we ended up, you know, driving into Salzburg or driving into Hallein or driving across the entire country going over to Budapest. So we spent a lot of time really, you know, checking out some of these little tiny towns because we, of course, had to stop for lunch and had to stop to pee and all those things that kids do, you know. So, we stopped at all these little tiny towns and found some real good gems.
How long was your trip?
We were actually there exactly 2 weeks.
Okay.
We spent a little over a week in Austria, but we also flew into Germany. We went over to Hungary, and we went into Italy as well.
Cool. So did you find it? Did you like pick up your car when you landed and then kept that same car the whole time?
We did. And actually that was one of the things is that when I was making the arrangements, it was actually a little difficult because a lot of the companies that are in Europe, they only want you to bring it back to the airport that you're flying in and out of.
Mm-hmm.
Hertz was the only one that would allow us to drive all over. And one of the interesting little tidbits is that depending on which countries you're going to or which cars you can pick, some cars are not allowed in certain countries.
Because they're big? Or what was the reason for that?
Wrong brand on it.
Really?
Yeah. Because we had a Volvo that could go everywhere, but there were some like Peugeot and Renault and everything, French cars that you couldn't actually have in other parts of the European nation. So it was very, had to do with some kind of trade kind of stuff. So, which I thought was very fascinating, but I couldn't understand it. So,
wow.
Well, you have to understand is also Hungary and is not, it's part of the European Union, but it's not because they have their own currency. So it's a little funny there.
Yeah, but I mean, I would think like, let's just say I lived there and I bought a Peugeot or whatever you say it, and then I wanted to move to another country. You can't take
You may not be able to register it.
Interesting.
You may have to get a different car.
That's bizarre. Yeah.
I thought it was kind of too.
So that's cool. So when I think of Austria, well, first of all, I didn't realize it bordered that many countries.
It's kind of in the middle of everything.
Yeah, it's like a circle.
it kind of is. So it looks a little like Kentucky, though, backwards.
I always think of The Sound of Music. Did you guys do anything that was any kind of tours that were Sound of Music tours or anything?
We didn't because we had done that about 10 years ago, my husband and I, and my kids are not big Sound of Music fans. However, we did go to Heilbronn, and Heilbronn is one of the areas that they were filming.
Mm-hmm.
And Heilbronn is a it's a castle fortress kind of thing, palace that has trick fountains all over it. So you could be standing there and, you know, the fountain goes off and you, if you're underneath it, well, then you're going to get soaking wet. So you just kind of, and then also in Verfin, that's where she actually sings "The Hills Are Alive."
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember that from when we were there before, but that you can see Verfin Castle in the background of that shot. So,
okay. So I've got an image in my head of the Griswolds.
Like that would be not that far off, except I'm not married to Chevy Chase.
Is that what you guys did though? Like ran through the fields?
No, but we did let the kids run around because, I mean, I've got an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
And so she needed to run and she climbed on rocks and she climbed on this and climbed on that. And as long as it was okay and it was acceptable to climb, mm-hmm. we let them do it because, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, she's got to burn off some energy.
So did you guys stay like in... You said you kind of had a home base and you drove through all these towns. Did you stay in one spot in Austria the whole time?
No. We actually, we stayed around Zell-Ebsee for a week. We actually own a timeshare and we traded it. So we went over there and actually used our timeshare for that and actually did a lot of the area around there. We did the Ice Cave. We did Verfin Castle. We did Salzburg. We did... the Eagle's Nest, we did the Birches Garden National Park, we did Grossglocknerstrasse, we did a lot of area things right around in that area, and then we actually drove all the way to Budapest and then came back to Vienna and spent a couple of days in Vienna.
So how far is that to like Budapest?
It was about 8-9 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was very interesting because you're driving. So the area we were actually staying in was very, very mountainous. Lots of ski resorts, lots of things like that. Mm-hmm. You get over towards Vienna, and Vienna looked a lot like Nebraska or Kentucky. It really did. It's these rolling hills, and they've got wheat fields and things like that, and it's very sparsely populated. And then we actually went through the checkpoint when we went over to Hungary, and all of a sudden, it was just really, really strange because you've got these little towns throughout Austria, and they're cute little towns and everything, and between the border of Hungary, which... Basically, it was a Russian border at one time, border crossing.
Not so far, yeah.
Because it was part of the Eastern Bloc. There's nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Wow.
One or two gas stations that you saw in between, but there's nothing there until you hit basically the city.
Wow.
So it was really kind of strange how it just transitioned like that.
That's interesting. Yeah.
But on that part, right at that border, the border crossing, is also where they have a huge wind farm. So they create most of the energy that runs that area and all those farms and all that they've got. That's one of the things about Europe is it's very, very clean. They use a lot of clean energy, a lot of solar panels and things like that, a lot of recycling. So a lot of clean energy, and that has made, I mean, it makes a huge difference in their rivers and their parks and things like that. So
did you have any issues with languages over there? Does everybody speak English?
Most people do until you get into the little podunk towns. So one of the things I always carried with me is I had my little German dictionary because in Austria they mostly speak German. And you could pretty much, I mean, between their broken English and my broken German, you know, we could kind of figure out what was going on. If you get into the cities, 9 times out of 10, they're going to speak English. If not, they speak French or they speak, several different languages. Most kids are bilingual, if not trilingual by the time they graduate high school.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And of course, I didn't have a Hungarian dictionary, but when we got to Budapest, everybody spoke English, and it was very cosmopolitan. We had burgers and fries for dinner. And it was one of the best burgers, I mean, I've had in my life. It was so good. The only weird thing was, is it was, the meat was kind of purple.
Oh.
But okay. It just had a purplish hue to it, but it was really tasty and really good.
Do you know why?
No, you don't ask.
That's just what they feed the tourists. That's
You're like, if I ask, they're going to know I'm American.
Well, one thing I did notice is because they've had, Europe has gotten a lot of Syrian refugees, that there is a very large, in these small towns, they have a very large Muslim population, and they've got several, most of the restaurants and everything have English menus, German menus, and Arabic menus.
Okay.
And when you, they've also got Arabic markets, so you can go in there and you can, and get, they have their own little grocery stores and all. So, it was quite a bit different than the last time I was there 10 years ago.
Wow. Do they have like, more of those kinds of restaurants too? Like, could you get some more?
You could find some halal restaurants. You could find a lot of kebab restaurants and shawarma restaurants and things like that. So yes, you did, they did have a lot more variety. But of course, about 90% of the restaurants were all Austrian. So you're getting Wiener Schnitzel, you're getting sausages, you're getting, you know, potato pancakes, the traditional dishes of Austria. So
was it easy driving around? Did you guys, I keep going back to that because I keep thinking that I can picture myself driving and not being able to read the road signs and stuff. How logistically is that? Is it?
Well, the, it's interesting because there are no shoulders.
Oh God.
There are no shoulders. I mean, all the time. There's actually little pull-off areas, and they usually have a call box on it. So if you have an emergency, you pull off in the little pull-off area and make a call. The speed limit sign, so even on the Autobahn, there's giant trusses, and it'll tell you what the speed limit is. The problem is that you're going through these little towns, and the speed limit changes constantly. So you really have to be on your toes, because it'll go from 100 kilometers to 80 kilometers to 50 kilometers to 30 kilometers in the matter of like a mile.
Oh, wow.
And then it'll go right back the same way another mile later. So you really have to watch those speed limits, especially in the little towns, because it's 30 in most little towns through their thoroughfares. The parking spaces are tiny. So Jeff would always, you know, let us out, and then he'd pull into the parking space, and then he'd wedge himself trying to get in and out of the door.
He'd pop the trunk and crawl out through the back of the car.
Yeah, we had a hatchback, so we did have to do that once.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And the thing was is that I said, you know, because Jeff would always drop me off at the hotel, so I'd go check in. I'm like, well, we circle the block and come back and pick me up. Mm-hmm. Well, circling the block took 35 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Because all these one-way streets and you're going along and, you know, it's like, oh, I know I want to go here, but okay, this road's only open from 6:30 in the morning till 10:30 at night or 10:30 in the morning. Then it's closed only for pedestrian traffic. Or you go this way and it's closed because of construction. It's like, okay, well now I need to go out and around even further. And you keep going further and further and further out until you finally come back. And then, of course, then the GPS went out and he was not a happy boy.
You know what that reminds me of? Don't laugh. But Pittsburgh.
Oh, my God.
No, seriously, though. If you get lost in Pittsburgh, you're probably going to have to cross a bridge, go through a tunnel, you know, do something crazy like that before you can turn around.
And well, it's kind of like Boston. You know, yeah, they have ways and means.
That's how it is out here, because everyone is built so far on top of each other that there is no place on the side of the road. There's no place to safely pull over or turn around. So you could pretty much drive.
No, but Seattle's in a grid. So okay, so you go up one street, you turn right, then you turn right again, and you turn right again, and you'll end up at the same spot. No. You can't turn right. So you have to turn left.
That's if you're not factoring in all the road construction.
It's still easier in Seattle, believe me.
Yeah. Pittsburgh is not a grid. It's like rivers and hills, and it's crazy.
So what you were talking about, like when the Garmin going out, I had a Garmin when I was in Iceland, and it just, for some reason, it never dawned on me that if I didn't know how to spell things correctly, it was going to be completely useless for me.
Oh, yeah. So we had a Volvo, which is like the ultimate safe vehicle. And it had 5 or 6 different sensors around the car. And it would beep at you if you're coming too close. And let me tell you, we used every single time we pulled into a parking space. And, you know, people have dents in their cars, and I was like, I don't even know how these Ferraris and Aston Martins and Alfa Romeos actually do it, because, you know what? Our car got dinged 3 times, so we bought the insurance, extra insurance, so make sure you get the insurance when you're driving.
That's what I was going to say.
Because you're going to get dings in it, you're going to get dents in it, things like that, and it's not even your fault.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I see. I don't want to drive in Europe. I'll wait till I've been like 10 times.
Well, driving in Germany and Austria is not as bad as driving in Italy, so.
Oh, God, you couldn't pay me enough money to drive in Italy.
Well, Northern Italy's closer to the German side, so it's actually not too bad. But, yeah, Southern Italy, forget it.
Southern Italy, no way. Tell me about the beer.
Tell me about your
beer experiences, because I know that you probably...
Oh, yes. They have, and I know I am a little prejudiced, and you know, but I love German beers. Mm-hmm. And that part of that Bavarian area. So I'm a little, you know, partial to that. And I don't like hops. I don't like a lot of hops in my beer. So over there, most of their beers have very little hops. They're not very alcoholic. So you can sit there and drink a beer and be totally fine and everything. And you know, they go down so easy. They really do. And then, of course, I persuaded Jeff to bring back pack Ziploc bags and bubble wrap. And so we brought back a 12-pack of different kinds of beer from over there. So we had one suitcase. That's all that was in it, because that was the weight limit, was 12 cans of beer.
That does add up fast, yeah.
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, we did Hofbrauhaus and you know, and we did lots of other really great beers that were from that area. So definitely partake of the beer.
Did you go to, are the breweries like they are here, where there's, I mean, the microbrewery scene here is so big, but is it kind of like that there, or is it you just go into restaurants?
No. When you go over there, there's usually 2 beers on tap. That's it. 2. Mm-hmm. And it is a sin to actually serve any beer in any glass. So when you go in there, if you're having a Hofbrauhaus beer, you have to have a Hofbrau glass.
Okay.
If you're having an Otterskeller, then you have to have an Otterskeller or an Almdudler. You have to have the glass that the Almdudler comes in. So there's usually only 2 beers, maybe 3 if you're lucky, that are actually...
They have to have all the glasses.
Because you got to have all the glasses that go with them. Now, it's summertime, so they had actually a few more. They had Radlers, but you could serve it as long as it was like a Stiegel. You had a Stiegel glass, and you had a Stiegel Lager, a Stiegel Helles, and a Stiegel Radler. You could serve it in the same glass.
You know how they have wine charms? I'm really surprised somebody, some ingenious person hasn't come up with like some stein that you slip like a metal disc with the thing in the front of.
Lindsay, invent that.
Well, that's, but the thing is you bring your own. If you bring, if you have a stein, a real stein, like at the Hofbrauhaus, if you are one of those elite families that has had, who has been going to the Hofbrauhaus for 500 years, they store your steins for you.
Oh, it's like the coffee places around here. You have your own mug.
And then so your, it's got your name on it and it's got it on the bottom and everything, and they pull it out and then, you know, and when you're done, you give it back to them, they wash it, they put it up on the shelf, and it's there for you the next time you come.
Oh,
that is your stein.
So did you buy any steins?
No, because we've got quite a stein collection. So
yeah, my dad does too, because he was stationed in Germany in the 60s and when he was in the army, and he's got some stories about how he came to.
Well, we bought a beer collection.
You got a what?
We got a beer collection and we brought home cheese.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you can bring home cheese.
As long as it's shrink wrapped.
Interesting.
You can't bring home meat, but you can bring home cheese.
How's the cheese?
Cheese is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm thinking Donna needs to have a party. And
but yeah, we there's certain things that every time I go to Europe I have to buy. And I'm sorry, George, but I love European underwear. Just plain cotton, you know, tidy whities. So every time I go to Europe,
say sorry, George.
George isn't a girl.
This podcast is going to take a turn here.
Tidy white
I was like, wait, what did you talk to George about the kind of underwear he likes?
It's been a heated debate between them for months now.
So, yep, that's one of my ultimate favorite things to buy over there, because they just they fit so nicely and they're perfect. So.
They sound very utilitarian.
Hey, and exactly. So I'm going to spend money anyway. At least I'm using it on something that I'm going to actually use.
That's those are the best souvenirs, I think. The ones that you use in your everyday life, and then every time you wear them or put them on or use it or eat the cheese or drink, consume whatever it is, you can think about your trip and remember your memories of your trip. It just
I also buy ornaments. So I buy Christmas ornaments. So every time I put my, you know, tree up, I put all my Christmas ornaments. It's like, oh, I got this one in Salzburg, and I got this one here, and I got this one in Budapest. And
yes, I love that. I do that too.
Yep.
And then when your underwear wears out, you know it's time to go back.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's time to go back.
Exactly. When my underwear runs out, then, you know, it's time to go back.
Now, I want to go back to, you had kind of rattled off the attractions you went to see, but I want to kind of ask a little bit more about those, because you talked about the ice cave, and then you had also listed in the show notes the salt mines. Can you talk about those?
Well, it's funny because those are the two things my kids love the absolute most.
Yeah, I can see that. I think I'd love
Alex that. Loved the salt mine, and it actually spans the border between Austria and Germany. So as you're walking through the cave, you're actually crossing the border into Germany and then coming back out in Austria. And it's not a working mine anymore, because it's become a tourist attraction, but they still mine salt from that area. And so they've got a deal with Germany that they actually mine the salt, and they give the salt to Germany, and Germany has to give timber to Austria. And that's been a deal that's been going on since the 1500s.
Wow.
So anyway, so this mine has actually been in existence for about that long. And you go through, and they have you on a little train, and then they take you through the mine, and actually you go down two slides.
Oh, in the train, or you get out of the train and you slide?
You get out of the train and you slide down. It's like sliding down a banister.
Nice.
Keep your feet up, and you actually just, and I was holding on to Connor, and Jeff was holding on to Alex, and we slid down the banister down to the bottom. They take you across this what they used to do actually, to they would actually brine the salt. So what they would do is actually pump fresh water into the mine, fill it up, get the water real salty, and then pump the water out and actually let the water dry out of the water. It would actually evaporate, and then what would be left would be the pure salt. And so that was the practice of how they did that. And then you go down another slide, an even longer slide, and then you come up and ride the train back to the beginning. Cool. And they have little movies and everything that you go to. Now, Connor's favorite thing was actually the ice cave. And this is not for the faint of heart. If you are have any kind of disability issues, accessibility issues, this is not the thing for you. Because you walk about 50, they always count it in minutes, about 20 minutes to get to the gondola, which takes you halfway there, which mm-hmm. takes you up about a mile. And then from the gondola, you have to go uphill another mile to get to the entrance to the cave.
Oh, and wow.
We're talking like a 12% grade.
Wow.
We're not talking, and it's at high altitude and everything. But you get in there, and you want to make sure that you have your coat, your gloves, your mittens, your hat, all those things, because it is so, so cold. It's about 26 degrees in there year-round. Wow. And it's even closed off. It's only open in the summer months.
Yeah.
And so you go up there, and you go through this ice cave, and it's just naturally formed ice sculptures, just from the wind and everything, and it gets into this cave and people going in there and breathing, and that's how this ice cave was formed. And it's basically kind of like an internal glacier.
Cool.
And it's amazing. It really is an amazing experience, but you need to be in good shape to do it.
So did your daughter have any trouble? Because not that she's not in good shape, but she's young. So.
She, of course, was complaining. But she got up there. She really enjoyed it. She came back down, and she collapsed.
Aw.
It's funny because those are the two things that both my kids liked the most.
Yeah, they sound awesome. So it seems like the ice caves probably wouldn't be too crowded because of that kind of...
It wasn't. I mean, they usually have about 20 to 30 people that actually go through the cave at any one time. They run their tours about every 45 minutes or so. So that way, you know, it gives you a little time to actually go through.
Right.
Yep.
So yeah. how many castles did you visit?
We went to the Salzburg Castle, which sits on top of the hill. If you ever seen a picture of Salzburg, that castle's up at the top of the hill. We went to Hohenwerfen Castle, which is a medieval fortress that actually was used to alert Salzburg before to see if troops were coming. Mm-hmm. And it was like the first line of defense. It's very interesting because they have their medieval torture room, and they actually have medieval torture instruments. And we didn't quite explain those to the kids exactly how they work. Now, we did actually, in Vienna, we did Schönbrunn Castle, which is actually was the seat of power for the Habsburgs. Mm-hmm. It was more a palace than it was really a castle. But we didn't get to do the grounds, but we did actually the castle itself. So, and if just to give you a little perspective, so think about the Biltmore, which a lot of people have been to the Biltmore. It was very similar in size, maybe slightly larger, whereas the Biltmore had what it's got like 50 rooms, something like that. The Schönbrunn Castle had like 200 in the same space.
Oh, wow.
Most of the rooms were very tiny, very small, because they were easier to heat in the wintertime. So they would, you know, they basically kind of close off sections of the castle so that they didn't have to heat that area.
Cool. So what was your favorite part of the trip?
Oh, in Budapest, we went to a thermal spa.
And oh, yeah, they have like a big, like a big lake kind of thing out there.
Well, it's not a lake. It's actually, it was a castle at one time, or some kind of a castle. And they've got 15 different pools that you can kind of go in and out of, different varying temperatures, different sizes, things like that. And then, of course, they've got a spa. So I got a massage and got to relax in the palm room and get a treat and things like that. They've got a restaurant right there. So people go for the whole day and you just sit in the pool and relax.
So is it kid friendly?
It is. It is. The kids were having a ball.
Yeah.
They loved it. And, of course, they were swimming all day, so they were exhausted.
Yeah.
So that was my own personal favorite.
That sounds awesome.
So I see something in the notes about truck stops.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Truck stops. You know, these are, there are a couple of things. We already talked about beer and
that's
food.
That's something you hear
in Austria than they are here. Truck stops. Truck stops are so much better. So imagine, you know, okay, so this is a truck stop. Just built just like we have gas stations, things like that. And they've got a little tiny convenience store that's got drinks and candy bars and things like that. But if you go into the other section, it's not Burger King's and KFC's and McDonald's. It's a hot bar. It's a short order cook. There's a salad bar. There's produce there, fresh produce. You can get energy drinks, juices, beer, champagne, you know. And the bathrooms. Now you do have to pay for the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. They're like 50 cents, but they are so clean. They're always stocked. You know, you don't have to worry about running out of toilet paper. The counters are all nice and dry and cleaned off all the time because they usually have an attendant that's right there. It's what we would aspire to be. But it'll never happen because, you know, people can't give up their Cheetos. So,
well, you know, that's good road trip food.
Yeah, but getting a nice cup of soup on a cold day, or, you know, going in there and getting, you know, a fresh omelet or something like that.
So was it cold? Because Europe's having kind of a heat wave right now, right?
It was cool when we were up to Grossglocknerstrasse, because that's actually way up in the mountains. It was cool when we went to the Eagle's Nest, because it started raining and the clouds rolled in. The rest of the time it was hot. Mm-hmm. And yes, we were in the middle of at the very start of Europe's worst heat wave on record.
Yeah.
The day we left, we flew through Paris and it was 115 degrees in Paris.
Yeah. That's insane. No.
And it was okay. It wasn't too bad in Austria and Budapest because, you know, it was lower humidity, but in Venice, the humidity was so high. It was like 80% humidity and it was 95 degrees.
Mm.
So it was like Florida right before a rainstorm. And it didn't rain to cool everything off. So,
yeah, still sounds like you had a really good time though.
Oh, we did. We really did. My advice would be make sure you take enough euros. Mm-hmm. If you're going to Hungary though, you need to use Hungarian forints, because Jeff was watching her ring up something for me. She charged 12% to change it over to euros.
Ooh.
So make sure you have enough forints when you're actually in Hungary.
Could you just use your credit card?
You can, but then you're going to pay credit card fees and transaction fees and foreign currency fees. And so, which it could end up being 12% too.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. But everything else was euros.
Like everything, everywhere else was euros, so
that makes it easier.
Yep.
Cool.
But yep, had a wonderful time. The kids absolutely loved it.
Awesome. it's really cool that you get to share that experience with your kids. I'm sure that's something they're going to remember forever. So guys, that's our show for this week. Thank you for hanging out with us. We would love for you to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page on outlandertravel.com. Be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. Really, we'd love to hear from you. On behalf of Sandy, Donna, George, and myself, Lindsay, thanks for joining us this week. Gotta fly.